The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello and welcome to the Spike Podcast. I'm Fraser Myers, and with me in the studio this week, as ever, we have Spike's editor, Tom Slater.
Hello.
And we're delighted to be joined by the author of Technology Is Not the Problem, Tamandra Harkness.
Hello.
So, plenty to discuss today. We'll be talking about the potential Tory wipeout, the great smartphone panic, and Just Stop Oil's attack on Stonehenge. Just before we start, I want to quickly remind everyone at home that if you're a Spike supporter, you can claim your free ticket to our next live event, which is on Wednesday, the 26th of June, with Brendan O'Neill and Melanie Phillips. Just go to spikes-online.com/events. Got about 2 weeks to go to the general election, and over the past 24 hours, there's been a series of absolutely devastating polls for the Conservatives. Tom, do you want to walk us through these? I mean, it's fascinating because it's been a bit of a dull election so far, but if these polls are correct, we could be about to see potentially a once-in-a-generation change in British politics.
Absolutely. It's a kind of a dull election that could result in the destruction of the Conservative Party as a going electoral concern, which is quite exciting, potentially, depending on your perspective. But yes, there's been this trio of MRP mega polls, as they're sometimes nicknamed, in the course of the past 24 hours. There's one by the More in Common think tank / pollsters, which was probably the more optimistic of the three that put the Conservatives on 155 seats, which would put it as one lower than its 1906 Nadir. So this would be historic in any stretch of the imagination. But it goes down from there. So YouGov, 108. And then there was one in the Telegraph this morning from Savanta, which puts the Tories on 53. Under that scenario, Rishi Sunak would lose his seat. They would only beat the Lib Dems into second place by about three seats. So this really gives you a sense of, if any of these polls are true, it would still be a historic once-in-a-century defeat for the Conservative Party. It's just how far the rot's going to run down. And it's obviously, there's the usual disclaimers about polls. They have been wrong before. It's worth saying that MRP polls tend to be more accurate. The YouGov ones in particular in recent elections have called it pretty close. They basically survey tens of thousands of people and they try and project using demographic data onto each seat. So it's generally more accurate. But it would have to be a kind of polling cock-up on a scale that we have never seen if the Tories managed to get out of this election without at least clocking up their worst ever result. So just that is a pretty grim perspective for them, definitely.
I mean, it's pretty extraordinary. But I mean, Tamandra, they deserve it, don't they, a little bit?
Well, I have to say, if you didn't think they deserved it before, after being actually in power for 14 years, the way they've run the campaign
has been
extraordinarily lacking in anything you'd want, even from an opposition, never mind a government. I mean, there seems to be no strategy, no principles, no nous, no common sense. No commitment to the actual. Wasn't there in the first week a minister who went on holiday rather than campaigning?
Yeah.
It's like, I've got my holiday booked. Like, you're a minister in the government. Don't you think you should at least make a token effort to get re-elected? And the latest round of, like, people nipping out to put a bet on when the election's going to be, when you work for the ruling party who are going to call the election. I mean, principles aside, surely it's obvious how bad that's going to look.
The most offensive thing about that is they only put £100 on as well. Surely go all in.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, you know.
If you're going to derail your career.
Yeah, empty
this.
Your savings. Like, let's do it.
It's just like they've all switched their brains off. Mm. It's incredible. And the succession of adverts. They have now withdrawn the electoral advert that basically talked about gambling and
don't put a bet on Labour.
Yeah, you'd have thought even maybe one of the people who had put the bet on might try and just get that one shelved before it went out. But yeah, they're just, yeah, exactly. I'm afraid I think they do deserve it. I don't think the election campaign possibly was a one chance to like win back some ounce of credibility, and said they've trampled it into the dirt.
Yeah, I mean, started with the rainy scene outside Downing Street. Then we had the D-Day snub in the middle of their campaign, just from bad to worse at every turn. And now these scandals, which are not even good scandals, an old Tory scandal, back in the day would have had some rent boys, someone in a Chelsea kit.
Extramarital sex.
Exactly. Some
massive corruption, drug taking, but now it's nipping out.
Tom, I mean, one of the factors here is obviously that many Tory voters, particularly 2019 Tory voters, just feel completely betrayed. I mean, so there is a significant political reason for this rout as well.
Oh, of course. And I think what is quite clear is that the Tories are basically the primary targets of the kind of general anti-politics mood. I think Labour are benefiting from that kind of by proxy, really. There is clearly not any enthusiasm for kind of human windsock that is Keir Starmer and his non-existent programme. It's just not there. And I think there's actually a bit of a warning for the Labour Party in a sense in what we've seen, because precisely the thing that could lead you to a situation where you had a substantial 2019 majority and a substantial Labour defeat, and then within the space of one election cycle, you then almost completely flip those prospects, speaks to the fact that we live in incredibly volatile political times. The kind of old political loyalties that used to exist, the fact that even at their worst election results, the Tories or Labour could count on roughly about 30% of the electorate. That's kind of all bets are off now, if you like. The relationships, whether it was the Tories in the middle class or Labour in the working class, those relationships have frayed. The party membership, such as they exist, have reduced radically, even in Labour's case. And therefore, everyone's a floating voter to an extent that hasn't really been the case previously. So in a government can fall almost as quickly as it rose. And so whilst you could be in a situation where Labour, Keir Starmer could, on paper, at the end of this election, end up one of the most successful politicians in history.
Yeah.
Insofar as the size of his majority, how quickly he turned things around and whatever. But as we all know, it will be so incredibly hollow, shaky. And whilst if the Tories do receive anything like the drubbing that some of these polls project, it would take them some time to rebuild. Not as long as you'd think, or not as long for Labour to fall, certainly, given the volatility and the desire for creative destruction that seems to exist amongst sections of the electorate at this point.
Definitely. And Samandra, I mean, this election is not just about the two main parties. In fact, the polls suggest that combined, they could get their worst ever vote share. I mean, we've seen the Lib Dems sort of surging with Ed Davies' stunts. We've seen the Reform Party, Nigel Farage, you know, throwing a real sort of spanner into the works. What have you made of the other parties in this campaign?
Well, I did actually have a quick look at the Reform, not a manifesto draft form. And I thought that was interesting because on the one hand, it's quite incoherent and has a massive section about fishing in incredible detail and farming, and then almost no detail on other things like education. So, but on the other hand, some of the policies are actually really sensible and common sense, and you can see that they'd have wide appeal. And I've already spoken to a couple of friends who said, well, I don't like Farage, but as a particularly self-employed person, they were saying, this actually would be really good for me, unlike the main parties. But as you say, obviously, some of that is simply about disillusionment with the main parties and who else can I give my vote to? I don't know how many people are really hoping that Reform will get a lot of MPs, but in terms of a protest vote and saying, you know what, if you want to appeal to us, some of these policies actually do appeal to ordinary people.
Yeah.
I think that might have a big impact. I mean, certainly the polls show, in some of the polls show them doing as well as the Conservatives.
Yeah.
So I think it's by no means unlikely that they will get some MPs.
Yeah, definitely. And Tom, we should talk a little bit about Keir Starmer, our presumptive next Prime Minister. I mean, this week he gave probably his clearest answer yet to what we've dubbed on Spiked the penis question.
Yeah. He's finally come around. I mean, the story of Keir Starmer and the penis question is a long and interesting one. So this is, I think it was 2021, he was first confronted with the question obviously surrounding the gender issue. He was on LBC with Nick Ferrari, I believe, and he was asked, can a woman have a penis? And he just stuttered and stammered and couldn't really answer the question. A year later, he managed to come up with his own formulation, which was that 99.9% of women do not have a penis. But as many people pointed out, that would mean that 1 in 1,000 women do have a penis, raises a lot of questions. How did he come to this particular number? Did he do a lot of market research? You don't really know.
That's a small town's worth of women.
Indeed. If concentrated, that could be.
They're all in the same town. That would be really
something in the water there. I'm not sure. But and now he has, in response to comments that former Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair had made, saying that women have vaginas and men have penises. Keir Starmer heartily agreed with this statement. So it's a hell of a journey. I think it's particularly telling that when his own MPs, people like Rosie Duffield, said things similar to this, only women can have a cervix and whatnot, he said that was the wrong thing to say. But as soon as Tony Blair pops up and says, actually, this is what the reality is, he'll happily parrot it, I think he's telling about his judgment and who he tends to listen to. But yeah, what a ride it's been. Yeah. If nothing else.
And Samantha, I mean, you know, this is now the question that journalists use to catch politicians out. It used to be, let's ask them about the price of a pint of milk and we'll find out how out of touch they are. Now it's, they ask, can a woman have a penis?
I know. I mean, what a world we live in. I did see, yeah, I saw that Tony Blair said some great photos. Like, and you just think, well, A, how mad that that you actually have to say that. And B, wasn't it him that first introduced the Gender Recognition Act,
yeah,
which said that basically a woman doesn't have a penis unless she's a man who's got a gender recognition certificate? But you can see that for Labour, this is a really tricky question, especially Labour, because you know, they have a very large constituency of especially young people who literally think that it's offensive to say that the definition of a woman is having a vagina rather than a penis. Mm. That, whether you're a man or woman is about how you feel. So they're trying to cater to that quite large constituency of potential voters for them, but also cater for, you know, vast numbers of adults who go, well, yeah, because otherwise the definitions become absolutely meaningless and woman in particular becomes a meaningless category. And then, you know, anything that we do currently separate men and women for particular reasons, like sport, then it becomes impossible to hold that line.
Yeah.
But it is, a lot of women are spitting tacks about the fact that they have been getting a lot of stick for a number of years for saying exactly this. And yet, as soon as Tony Blair says it, oh yes, Keir Starmer is very happy to agree with him.
Yeah, definitely. This episode of the Spike podcast is brought to you by AG1.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Now, all of us know that staying healthy is important, but with only so many hours in the day, it's no wonder that most of us struggle to really look after ourselves. Keeping healthy can often feel impossible. I used to feel this way too, until I started using AG1. AG1 is a daily nutrition supplement that keeps staying healthy effortless. Just one scoop contains 70 high-quality ingredients designed to meet your nutritional needs. I usually drink AG1 while I'm getting ready for work. All I do is mix one scoop with water, and in less than a minute, I've got everything I need to start the day. That single scoop of AG1 contains tons of useful ingredients. Pantothenic acid helps keep your focus without relying on coffee. Niacin can help reduce fatigue. And minerals like chromium will help you unlock all the nutrients you need from your food. For me, though, one of the best things about AG1 is how much it supports my heart health. The B vitamins in my morning scoop have given me so much more energy throughout the day. AG1 is designed by a world-class team of scientists with more than 100 years' experience between them. And if that isn't good enough for you, AG1 is trusted by Olympians and F1 drivers. You'll be hard-pressed to find a more trustworthy brand. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription. Just go to drinkag1.com/spiked. That's drinkag1.com/spiked. Check it out. So, I mean, over the past couple of years, there's been a kind of growing sense that social media and smartphones are incredibly bad for us. You know, they're accused of causing anxiety and mental health problems, particularly among the young. I mean, I was struck this week, actually, the US Surgeon General said that social media platforms should be given almost like cigarette style advertising warnings, telling people this is not safe. I mean, do you think what do you make of that whole discussion? I mean, it just seems quite reductive. Is social media really, you know, making us ill?
No, of course not. I mean, it's this tendency to try and push agency away from human beings onto something else. And in this case, it's technology. And I ended up, after a few title changes, that's why my new book is called Technology is Not the Problem, because it's like, look, you're pointing to technology, to blame technology for all these, you know, there's a lot of very negative developments. Mm. Certainly young people are much more anxious and less able to function and more mentally ill than they were 30, 50 years ago. And because there is some coincidence with the rise of the use of smartphones and the internet by young people, people have pointed that and go, well, they are, that's what's causing it. But like so many of these things, you just have to zoom out a little bit and look at what's happening in society. And it's not that surprising that young people are more anxious and don't know what's going on. And in particular, I think the focus on identity and the constant worry about who am I, do other people see me the way I want to be seen? Yeah. Do other people see me the way I see myself? Is obviously going to cause a lot of anxiety and uncertainty, and particularly in teenagers, because that's the time of your life where you are trying to work out, oh, okay, well, you know, who am I? How do other people see me?
Yeah, definitely. And Tom, I mean, a lot of these kind of claims feed into demands for censorship, for regulation of the internet, you know, especially, you know, we need to protect the children from online harms. We have an entire online safety bill on the basis of this.
I know, and it's definitely one of those things where it's clearly turned into a profound sort of panic about not just children's use, but also even adults' use. There's this kind of sense that even grown adults are powerless before these algorithms, that they cannot kind of resist the allure of the scroll, and that all of these things are, it's like an evil machine that needs to be turned off. You can entertain two thoughts at the same time, one of which is that people can develop quite unhealthy relationships with their smartphones and social media. But the idea that they should be robbed of any responsibility for changing that, for adapting whatsoever. And I was interested in Otamander, actually, because it's interesting how even adults seem to act as if they have no power over this. But where the children are concerned, you think there's quite a commonsensical solution to this, which is to say that this tendency to give even quite young kids smartphones with no filters on them whatsoever, no controls whatsoever, is obviously a bad idea. And yet there seems to be a lot of adults, parents, who for whatever reason feel disempowered even from kind of imposing those limits on the children in their care. Do you reckon that's a big part of this as well?
Which is definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's
a lack of adult authority.
Exactly, it's symptomatic of parents not feeling confident to say, no, you're 8, you don't need a smartphone. You can look at my phone when I'm there. Or, you know, you're 12, I'm going to give you a flip phone so you can call me if you need a lift home from school, but you don't need to be scrolling the internet. But that is the whole, underlying the whole panic, I think, about technology and smartphones is a loss of confidence in ourselves and our ability to set the courses of our own lives. The very idea that a little machine that can show you things from the outside world and messages from your friends is somehow controlling your life. Like, well, how feeble are you if this machine, which is really just there for entertainment and advertising, as far as the people who made it are concerned, can run your life for you? That would be like saying, oh, my life is controlled by television adverts and billboards. Like, you would just think somebody was pathetic if they said that.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, actually, I mean, how does this compare to sort of previous technological panics or media panics? I mean, we look back, you know, we kind of laugh at the people now who said, you know, Elvis is corrupting the youth, or
television is going to destroy the family,
yes,
or whatever.
Yeah. And going to turn your eyes square and, you know, turn you into the zombie.
Yes, video games. Yeah, all of those things. Exactly.
Novels as well, people used to complain about.
Well, if I can just recommend somebody else's book for a change, psychology professor called Pete Etchells has written a book called Unlocked, in which he very specifically looks at the evidence about screen time and in particular for young people, and unpacks it and says, A, there's really very little decent research. B, what there is does not show that a wholly negative picture. But he also looks back exactly at this history and says, yeah, in 1861, when the tax was taken off printed material, there was a panic about how mothers would neglect their babies while they read novels, and the working classes would stop going to work because they were reading cheap books. I mean, if only.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Our next sponsor today is ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not closing the door when you use the bathroom. I mean, the chances are you'll be left to do your business. But why give the creeps the chance to invade your privacy in the first place? You might not realize it, but most of us are letting the creeps in every time we go online. That's because your internet service provider tracks everything you do on the internet, even if you're using private or incognito mode. To stop my ISP from logging all my online activity, I've been using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN doesn't just block your ISP either, but it completely hides your IP address. This stops any third party from accessing your online activity. Now, you might see that as unnecessary, but just think about how much of your personal information is online these days. That information is valuable, and ExpressVPN will help you to keep it safe. The best part about ExpressVPN is that it's incredibly easy to use. All I had to do was download the app, tap one button, and I was all set. When I'm working, relaxing, or even on the move, ExpressVPN quietly protects me in the background. That's because ExpressVPN works on all devices, including TVs, phones, and laptops. No wonder it's rated the number one VPN service by CNET and The Verge. So, protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/spiked. That's expressvpn.com/spiked, and you can get an extra 3 months for free. That's expressvpn.com/spiked. So this week, Just Stop Oil attacked Stonehenge, the 5,000-year-old monument. I think there's a lot of anger that it has created, understandably, but also a lot of head scratching. People are thinking, what the hell does Stonehenge have to do with oil? I mean, Tom, are there any targets that are sort of safe from Just Stop Oil?
I was
now
thinking that, because Stonehenge is a useful metaphor for this, because after Stonehenge, you know, throwing soup at Van Gogh, yeah, any of these other things
smashing
that they've done.
Smashing up Magna Carta.
I forgot those two elderly ladies who, it was one of the most kind of accidentally comical stunts that they've done yet. It was adorable. I remember when they were passing each other the glue to glue themselves together, I thought they were maybe passing a Werther's original. But it was, yes, the Stonehenge thing is a reminder that for these people, nothing is sacred, quite literally. And there's this kind of sense in which, in a coherent fashion, that because they genuinely believe the world is about to end and that anyone who isn't throwing themselves on the gears of the machine now is complicit in what they literally call a genocide. I mean, you were pointing this out earlier, that's they want Rishi Sunak to basically be tried for genocide because of his continued use of fossil fuels. It's in a sense that it makes sense that they would do absolutely anything to try and grab that attention. What's so striking to me is that how any sort of patience for them, not just among the public, because that disappeared pretty quickly as soon as these groups came on the scene, but even amongst the great and good, the Labour Party, the media, that's just gone now. So you do think, what could they possibly do next? You know, what treasured ancient site artifacts, artwork are they going to go after? Because all bets are off now, it feels like, on some level. But
yeah, Tamandra, what have you made of it?
Well, it just absolutely reveals that this is the character of political campaigning now. It's not about how do you get results. If you actually wanted to win over support to your programme of very radical cuts in fossil fuels and very deep and radical environmental policy changes, you would try to win support to your cause instead of apparently methodically pissing off absolutely everybody in turn. So as you say, they long ago pissed off ordinary people who just want to get about and get their relatives to hospital and so on, and apparently not caring about that. And then they said they would target holiday flights, just, you know, in case there was anyone that was still sympathetic. And then now they've not only done Stonehenge, which clearly is going to outrage a lot of very old school caring about the environment people, but then they went on to target Taylor Swift's private jet. So now the Swifties hate them as
That's
well.
Always a bad it's move.
It's like if you were setting out to make the maximum number of people hate you so that you could say everybody hates us because we are martyrs and the only people who have the truth and are going to be martyred for the truth, this would be your strategy. So I have to conclude that this is in fact their strategy, and they don't want to win any support to their cause. What they want is to be a small group of martyrs that everybody else hates.
Yeah, I mean, there is it resembles more of a cult, I'd say, than a political movement. Would you agree, Tom? I mean,
that's certainly in terms of the doomsday narrative.
Yeah,
I mean, it is worth looking at what they actually say and the sort of messages they're being fed. We've written about it from time to time.
Yeah,
stuff that Roger Hallam, who's the kind of Charles Manson resembling alleged brain behind the whole operation. He's preaching this idea that it is basically like a Mad Max style dystopia, like this way in which everything will go to hell in a handcart. You know, it'll just be kind of smouldering cities full of marauding, violent rape. Yeah, this is the stuff he's telling these kids.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that they react in this way, but I completely agree with you, Tamandra. They're just the most extreme example of where so much faux progressive campaigning has gone now, which is that it's all about them. I am on the right side of history. I am virtuous. I'm wonderful. And none of you idiots get it. The pretense that they're winning people over or trying to create changes there, but it's surely you must realize it's going to push everything in the opposite direction. You do start to wonder if they're like a fossil fuel industry plant. That's the only plausible explanation for their antics.
Funded by the Getty family for former, you know, oil billionaires. Maybe there's a connection. But I think that's more because they're sort of, you know, giving penance for their old sins. But who knows? Tamandra, want to add anything finally on Just Stop Oil?
I just think that it's completely revealing about the state of modern politics, that it is all about projecting your identity and not at all about trying to achieve change. I mean, the demands that they have are completely unrealistic. Although, as you say, if you believe the world's about to end, then nothing else matters. But it's very easy, isn't it? It's like the old sci-fi films where the world has ended and therefore all the problems become very simple and the moral choices become very simple. Mm. If the world's really about to end, moral choices become very simple. You're either with us or against us.
Mm.
But the world's not about to end.
And most of us are really not with them.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.